Ho ho! Welcome to the Lakers Collective. Happy to see you guys here. Christmas week. We are just days away. I'm Trevor Lane. He's Jovan Buha. Jason Tipp. Guys, we're almost there. Lakers Rockets Christmas Day, just a few days away. We've got Lakers Suns tomorrow. A bunch of injuries to talk about. All stuff to get into. But I love this time of year. I don't know about you guys, but I am very much in the Christmas spirit right now.
Yeah, I am traveling for Christmas for the first time in almost a decade, back when I was living in Charlotte. And it's definitely a very different feeling, but it's great to see all my family and friends. And by the way, we don't talk enough about how much our intro music is just an absolute banger. Like, that's something that deserves a little bit more attention. It's good to see you guys.
Good to see you guys. Gets me in the zone, that intro. But fun fact, my wife's birthday is actually Christmas. So that has been something to have to juggle over the last 6 years is Lakers play every Christmas, and I have not missed a Christmas game yet. So yeah, it's been the holidays can be a little stressful for me on that end, but of course it's the best time of the year.
How do you manage? Like, does she get frustrated with that because she doesn't get to split up her birthday and Christmas? And do people do the whole like this counts for both type gifting?
I try to double up on the gifting. So I try to make her feel special, and she has acknowledged that since I came into her life, like, because she grown up would always get Merry Christmas texts from people, or like, mm-hmm. she wouldn't be able to have birthday parties, or would try to have it like in early January, but it's not really the same as having it on your actual day, or you know, within a few days plus minus. So it's been tough. It's been something to navigate, but she knew when we started dating that I was like, this is my life. This is like my schedule, and I work on holidays. I travel half the year. Like, it just is what it is. And she's been very accepting and supportive.
It's part of the deal.
Shout out to the wives.
That's right. That's right. For sure.
Yes.
Big time. Can't tell you guys how many times I've had, oh, sorry, I gotta go. This just happened. News just broke, whatever's going on. But, our families make it all possible. Yes. All right, everybody. We're happy to see y'all here coming in. If you have not done so yet, please make sure you do subscribe to the channel. And I usually like to start out talking about positive stuff. Unfortunately, so much of what's going on with the Lakers right now has to do with injuries, and that's always so negative. Right now, we're on pins and needles waiting to hear on about half the team, it feels like. Luka Doncic, Austin Reeves, DeAndre Ayton, Rui Hachimura, Gabe Vincent, on and on and on. So many different players are out right now. We certainly saw that be a factor in their game against the Clippers. The Lakers had four of their five starters down for that game. It's been tough sledding. Jovan, where are we at on the injury front with the Lakers? How much of this do you think is them being extra cautious with players? And why can't this team seem to keep themselves healthy for more than, say, two games before we get another tidal wave of injuries?
I mean, this has been going on for years now at this point, yeah. Right? It feels like there are certain franchises, for whatever reason, the Lakers, the Grizzlies, the Pelicans. There's been several teams over the last few years that have just continually dealt with a rash of injuries that decimate the rotation, and you just never see the team fully healthy, or you see them fully healthy for a couple of games. And this has been an ongoing thing. Obviously this year it feels like even more maybe than in previous seasons, or maybe just because the expectations for the Lakers are higher, that it seems to stand out a little bit more. But I think they have been very cautious, to be clear. And anytime a player has had any sort of nick or anything like that, they have erred on the side of, I mean, even going back to training camp, right? Like that was the, we talked about like the foundation of the season, and that was the time to plant some of those seeds, and they just weren't really able to plant those seeds and fertilize it because so many guys were in and out during training camp, during the preseason, etc. But with this, I think it reached a breaking point against the Clippers. Season low, 88 points in that game, losing Luka for the second half, going 6 for 38 on threes. which was the third worst three-point shooting performance in the franchise's history and bottom 18 three-point performance of all time for any team that attempted 33 or more threes in a game. So it was just like the bottom fell out with the offense. And it was actually a pretty good defensive performance. They held the Clippers to 103 points. The reason the Lakers, I thought, were even within striking distance at various points was because the Clippers could not score against them, which part of that is like the Clippers' own offensive foibles, but part of it was the Banshees and the Lakers defense, and like they have been playing a little bit better defense the last few games, so that has been encouraging. But they just cannot score, they cannot make shots, and I think like if they had the same group available against Phoenix, it's probably going to be the same thing against Phoenix. I think it'll be a little bit better, but like this group can't really shoot, so or the available group can't shoot. So yeah, I mean it's tough. Like they need to get back Luka and Austin and Rui and DA and all these guys. Otherwise they're really going to struggle offensively.
Yeah. Jason, is that where you're at as well? Like they've got the guys who can defend can't shoot and the guys who can shoot can't defend.
You know, I think that game was an exceptional case of poor shooting relative to quality. Like it's weird. Like I actually thought the Lakers played pretty significantly better basketball than the Clippers in the second half of that game. LeBron, I thought, was the best player on the floor and was, I mean, if there's one giant bright spot to take from that game, it's that LeBron looks great physically and he continues to generate dribble penetration. I thought he generated a lot of those high quality looks. Synergy had them at 15 unguarded catch and shoot threes and they made two of them. So like, there's a certain amount of that where it's like, you know, you go 5 for 15, that's still poor shooting, but that's completely reasonable to expect even with that set of shooters. And that's a game that's right there in the balance late and maybe LeBron can get it done. So it's like, on the one hand, you're encouraged. The Jake LaRavia, Jared Vanderbilt, Jackson Hayes trio defensively alongside LeBron James is really starting to put together some good quality hoops between that group, and especially with Marcus Smart as that fifth guy. But here's a hot take. Austin Reeves and DeAndre Ayton are better basketball players than those dudes. So, like, it's just really hard to compete with the best talent in the league. And look, I know the Clippers are not the Clippers that we remember from years past, but, like, they have talent. You know, if anything, I thought you could tell from that game. It actually kind of reminded me of the Lakers team from, like, 2022, where, like, it's the bad combination of, like, yeah, you're missing in some key position groups, but you're also just playing bad basketball. Like, the Clippers just are playing bad basketball, too, relative to their talent. And I thought it was just like an example there of like the Lakers are a very sharp basketball team that plays serious basketball. They just were dealing with some severe personnel shortcomings in that game. And I think, you know, as we look forward, some of this is going to test the Lakers in their depth. They got a tough schedule coming up. They have obviously this Houston Phoenix week. And then after that, like next week, you got Memphis twice. Memphis is a tough team that will beat you if you play sloppy basketball. I can't remember who the third team.
Detroit.
Detroit's going to be a tough one. That's a big physical, you know, kind of ass kicking type of team. And you know, Austin's hurt and Rui's hurt, and we haven't heard anything about Luka. And you know, I do think that this stretch is going to be a tough test for a Laker team that kind of needs to come up for air a little bit.
Yeah, it is going to be a tough test. And the when I look at games throughout the course of the season, one of the most important things in order to get the playoff seeding that you want is to win the games you're supposed to win. And certainly this Clippers game, the way they were playing, is a game that you should win, right? You've got to take care of business. The Lakers have largely done a pretty good job of that over the course of the season. So unfortunately, due to the injuries and an insanely cold shooting night, you flipped the game that probably was going to be a victory and you turned it into a loss. Now you're going into a more difficult part of your schedule. And if you are missing guys, we already know Rui is going to be out against Phoenix. We already know Gabe Vincent will be out, but Austin, Luka, DeAndre Ayton, these guys being up in the air, you can very quickly rack up some losses. And the particularly dangerous part of that is not only potentially losing games, but you're also pushing wins onto the records of Western Conference opponents, because you're going to be playing Phoenix, you're going to be playing Houston. These are teams that are directly pursuing you in the standings. So this is a really important stretch of the Lakers' schedule coming up here. And you might be shorthanded for it. So we'll see what they can do to pull off here. Jovan, what's the best case scenario? What do you want to see here from this team, knowing that even if they get some good news, most likely there's going to be some degree of shorthandedness, I suppose, for these games for the Lakers?
I mean, I think that the best case scenario is finding a way to win, you know, similar to the, sure. the wins in Portland or the, you know, the win in Portland or the win in Minnesota. I think those were two great examples of this team overcoming a certain level of adversity and persevering on the road. I think, you know, it might be a short term step back in terms of maybe they just rest the guys and are extra cautious for the Phoenix game, and then they could get them back for the home game against Houston on Christmas. Like, that might be a semi plausible scenario, but I mean, I think the best case scenario here is no serious Luka injury, right? Like, because Austin just suffered this calf strain. He's been out over a week now. And typically with a calf strain, it's like a 2 to 4 week injury. They said a week, but he's now missed over a week. And if he's not back against Phoenix, obviously that's now bleeding into almost 2 week territory. But with Luka having, they called it a leg contusion, but upon reviewing the play that he got injured, it was clearly a calf contusion. And you can deem it however you want to deem it, but it was clearly a calf injury. And Luka's dealt with calf injuries. Actually, around this point last season was when he got injured with his calf injury that kept him out until he got traded and returned with the Lakers. So Luka has dealt with this type of stuff before, and I think the Lakers are going to be extra cautious with that. But I think the best case scenario here, regardless of record, even if you go 0-2 in the next couple of games, is no serious Luka injury, because the Lakers, like, this would be the worst time for LA, right when you're getting the big three finally starting to click a bit. You're seeing some positive signs with LeBron. I thought that was his best offensive performance of the season against the Clippers, not just because the season high, but because of just the force he played with, the aggression. He took 28 shots. His previous season high was 18. So there's just a level of usage and decisiveness with LeBron that was really encouraging. That, of course, like, part of it was no Luka second half, no Austin. But I think, like, LA's, I think, starting to click in some ways on the offensive end, figuring things out. Defensively, again, as we mentioned, they've been better. This would be a terrible time for Luka to have to miss a week, 2 weeks, 3 weeks, whatever. So I think positive news on the Luka front would be the biggest thing I'm looking for here, potentially later today and you know, at least within the next few days.
Can I piggyback on that really quick too with Luka? Like, Luka for a solid month now has been playing below the top tier superstar level. He's been putting up massive counting stats because he has the highest usage rate in the league, but his percentages and his turnovers have not looked good. And if that is related to a physical wear and tear thing, they are better off giving him some space to heal a little bit, because, you know, LeBron by himself, that's too much to ask under any circumstances, you know, about to be 41-year-old. But I do think LeBron and Austin could carry this team for a couple weeks. So, you know, obviously they don't have any championship ceiling or anything, but they could carry this team to a, you know, 6-3 over a 3 week span or something like that. So, like, if Luka is dealing with something that's affecting his play, he needs to address it and get healed up.
Yeah, that's going to be important for the Lakers, especially with calf issues, and unfortunately Luka and Austin now both dealing with calf issues. But we're seeing this around the NBA where calf strain is becoming unfortunately a very prevalent term, but also a very frightening one, because we know the link to Achilles injuries and everything else. So we're seeing these really hit the NBA hard this season. I think part of it is just the pace that the game's being played at. We've seen that go through the roof even this year, picking up the pace even further. So you got to be careful with these injuries. You don't want these guys out long term, but you also need probably at least two of the three out there on the floor. So hopefully we get a clean bill of health on Austin Reeves heading into tomorrow's game against the Phoenix Suns. If not, Luka, it looked like it was a contusion. That's maybe the good news on the Luka injury, is that it wasn't something where it was non-contact. He just stepped or something, and then you feel a pop or something like that. It looked like he got a knee right into the calf muscle. Hopefully that means he'll be okay, but they're not going to push it too far. So like Jason said, I think that they do need to make sure that they get him 100% healthy and maybe getting him back in rhythm. And, you know, let's talk a little bit about that, the three-point shooting, because Luka right now, 32% from three on the season, has been, I don't want to say out of sorts, he still has some big performances, but has been a little bit off, as you said, over the last month or so. LeBron right now, 28% from three on the season. In fact, of the Lakers roster, there's only three players on the roster that are shooting better from three than they did last season. I'm omitting Marcus Smart because he barely played last season. But three players are shooting better from three than they did last season. Most guys shooting well below their averages. Is regression coming here, Jovan? Are these numbers going to just naturally improved? The Lakers need to do something about their shooting. How much of it is their high volume guys, Luka, LeBron, and Austin, What do you see from this team on a shooting perspective?
I've seen better.
I mean, that was historically bad. You mentioned it was in the worst. Yeah, I mean, within the worst 18 three-point shooting performances ever.
I think that the macro issue for this group right now is they are they're a below-average three-point shooting team who is also a low-volume three-point shooting team. So when looking at, like, I know we're going to touch on, I think, Denver a little bit later in the show, but one of the key differences with a team like a Denver or a team like a Houston is Houston's maybe a little bit more applicable here in terms of like a one-for-one analog of they are a low volume three-point shooting team, but they are a high team in terms of three-point percentage. They make the threes that they take, even if they are taking a low volume, and they have capable shooters, and they're putting those shooters in certain spots to be effective. With Denver, I think they just have better shooting overall than LA, but they're also a relatively low three-point shooting team in terms of volume. So I think like those are a couple of examples of you don't have to take 2024 Boston Celtics level of threes or even 2026 Boston Celtics level of threes, but like you do need a certain level of volume, and ideally you just need a certain caliber of shooter. But I think this performance against the Clippers, it was an exaggerated performance in terms of just how low the floor was for this group, but I thought it stood out that like players I would consider banshees: Jake LaRavia, Marcus Smart, Jared Vanderbilt, Maxi Kleba, they combined to shoot 1 for 18 on threes. Ooh. And a lot of those threes were wide open. Like those are not, with the exception of Marcus. Marcus takes some bad threes, but the other three guys, you pretty much like have to force those guys to shoot, right? Like Maxi Kleba has been turning down open looks. Jake LaRavia has been turning down open looks. Vando, I think, is trying to show that he can be at least a little bit of a threat there, has been shooting a little bit better. And it was kind of ironic that Vando was the one guy who made a three, but like the floor for the Lakers Banshees right now. And again, you could throw in, I guess who else would we consider a Banshee? Jackson Hayes doesn't take threes. I guess he would be another guy. Otherwise everyone else is more like offensive minded, but none of those guys are more than shaky shooters, right? Like we saw Marcus can have the 8 3-point game against the Spurs. He could also go 0-for-9 like he did against the Clippers. There's no real floor there, right? Like the floor is very low. And I think this is the central dilemma right now for JJ in terms of balancing out the lineups, balancing out the rotation, is that they do start front loaded with the offensive side with the starters. Then they start to stagger in some banshees, some defensive guys. And those lineups tend to be their best lineups. And then sometimes they shift it towards some of the more defensive lineups, which, as Jason noted earlier with LeBron, have worked more recently. But if you're in a situation like the Lakers are now, where you're without several starters, several of your best offensive players, you just have no floor with these guys. Like if it's LeBron and a bunch of banshees for 48 minutes versus like these 5-minute stretches, that's a totally different scenario where you just don't have enough shooting. So I thought one thing that stood out when we said we were going to do a shooting episode, I looked this up. The Lakers right now are last in the NBA in catch and shoot 3-point attempts per game, which I think like that's a whole thing with their offense right now. They're just not generating enough high percentage 3-point looks. So it's like the volume is low, but it's also the types of threes you want. They are way too low in that category with a bunch of lottery teams down there in like the bottom five or seven. So like they need to get back to generating some of those looks. And I thought you saw that shift post Luka trade last year. Remember the Lakers 3-point volume really, shifted, and they went from one of the lower 3-point shooting teams to one of the higher ones. And I think they got to figure out a way to get back to that. Part of that was probably DFS and just his synergy with Luka. But right now it's like they're not making enough threes. They're not taking enough threes, and based on who's playing and like this shift toward the Banshees, I do have some concerns of like the Banshees just can't shoot. That's just the reality. And you will get some outlier performances, but they have a bunch of guys who are good offensive players who can't defend, and then a bunch of guys who are good defensive players can't shoot. So like you got to kind of synergize that, or maybe make a trade
or change the starting lineup.
I didn't say it. I didn't take the bait.
Jason, where are you at on the Lakers shooting woes? Yes, it was an outlier game in a bad way last time, but it's still a concern. We're talking about, JJ's talked about winning in the margins. 3-point attempts and percentage is certainly a margin stat that you keep an eye on. A lot of teams have an advantage there over the Lakers. Is there a solution to this? They've been kind of the bizarro team in the NBA, where they've been masters of the mid-range, and that's the way they've won games, and that's the way their offense has been good. But ultimately, you need to be a threat behind the 3-point line, right?
Yeah, so I think there's two ways to look at this. I think there's the direction Jovan was going, which is like, yeah, like when you're generating the league worst attempts of catch and shoot threes per game, that's going to affect your rhythm to a certain extent. And part of that is the way the offense is put together. You have a lot of these ball handlers that take contested shots. Like Austin, Luka, and LeBron all shoot with defenders on them often. And that's one of the primary driving forces of their offense. And so not looking to kick if they feel like they can get to a look that they can knock down. There's definitely, and we talked about this with Luka in particular, but I think it extends to all of them. There could be more investment in rhythm, because that's what I mean when I say there's two different ways to look at this. There's how do you get the current group to shoot better? And then there's what are the realities of this roster? And how you get the group to shoot better is you invest more in rhythm, try to generate more catch and shoot threes by taking advantage of the opportunities to throw those kickouts. And then I thought Jovan also did a good job calling out like just the aggressiveness. Like, Jake, you got to be shooting, dude. Like you of all people out there got to be shooting when you're out there. You know, I think that's been argued. Jake's been a big help for this team in so many different ways, but like he could just him getting to the point where he's knocking down 35% of his threes would do wonders for this team on that end of the floor. The roster realities are complicated because, you know, there's this conversation surrounding 3-point shooting as a product of efficiency, right? Like it's an extra point. Every time you make one, you get 50% more points than you do on a two. But true shooting percentage is a calculation that factors in the twos, the threes, and the free throws. And the Lakers technically have the second best true shooting percentage in the NBA. So in theory, when it comes to the math, so to speak, per shot attempt, the Lakers are doing fine. Where I think that gets tricky is a huge portion of that is built around getting to the foul line. And that can come and go depending on how the game's being officiated, whether or not they're playing a team that's being really disciplined on those drives and pick and roll and like doing a good job of keeping their hand out of the cookie jar or not leaving their feet and forcing Austin and Luka to make shots. And so I think it's more just like in the large sample, their efficiency is fine. But in the small sample, when teams do a good job of not fouling, all of a sudden that gets removed from the equation and then their 3-point shooting becomes a problem. And I think you could see some real differences between them and the other top offenses in the league. Like if you look like Denver, Oklahoma City, New York, Boston, these are all elite 3-point shooting teams. And Boston in particular, they're 11th in 3-point percentage, but that's because they were ice cold for the first like 3 weeks of the season. They've been top three in 3-point percentage over the last 10, 15 games. Like they've been dead on. And so I think one of the other areas where we see this effect is net rating. So like, I think a big part of why the Lakers don't put, so to speak, or build real margin with teams is that they can't knock down shots. I'm watching this game the other night with Orlando and Denver, and they hang 35 points in 6 minutes. And it's because they can get super hot from three. Yeah, like Jovan's right. They don't take a lot of them, but they make them. And they shoot a really high. They can get into these stretches where it's like Jamal's knocking everything down. Cam Johnson's knocking everything down. Jokic is hitting threes. And they can blow a game open. And frankly, the Lakers just aren't a good enough shooting team to go on a stretch where they hit 6 out of 7 threes and turn a 3-point lead into an 18-point lead. They don't really have that in their bag. And so I think, like, again, internally, you can invest more in rhythm. I do think certain guys will shoot better. I think Jake will shoot a little better. He's shooting below his career average. Like, I think Austin, Luka, LeBron will all shoot better from three over the course of the season than they have. It's, like, impossible for them to shoot any worse than they have. But I think Jovan's right. Like, some sort of roster balancing trade to try to turn this into – like, I'd argue shooting is, like, another legitimate potential upside for this team. Is like whoever that three is, because of how much they switch – like, you obviously can't have a Rui out there who's making a ton of defensive mistakes, but even if he's like a somewhat lesser perimeter defender, but he's just like a 42% from three guy, that could go a long way to helping these teams, this team tie off some of these runs into points.
And Rui is your best three-point shooter by a decent margin. So that's the challenge there too, is that if you do improve defensively, are you taking another step back when it comes to the shooting? You know, you mentioned the Lakers. One of the ways that their offensive rating has been up, has been pretty solid throughout the season, has been their ability to get to the free throw line. And now we've seen in some recent games where they haven't gotten to the line as much. Teams have done a better job defending without fouling, and that's created some issues because you don't have that margin where you can also, hey, if we're not getting to the line, we're going to drive and we're going to kick and we're going to get this wide open three. We're not generating, we're not seeing those shots generated as much. But Jovan, speaking of the fouls, JJ, Marcus Smart, LeBron, they all had comments about the officials after last game. So we're talking big picture about the Lakers offense. There's been a lot of complaining from the Lakers players. They haven't been thrilled with the whistle they've been getting or not getting. Where do you see this going? Is that a bigger concern too come playoff time, where we're talking about areas where the Lakers offense could actually have a little bit of trouble? If those whistles are not being given to them in the playoffs, we're seeing them struggle in these situations right now in the regular season.
There's been a lot of complaining league-wide, right? Like you had the whole Houston-Denver situation, David Adelman. I mean, from the first matchup, then David Adelman got ejected in the fourth quarter in the second matchup over the past week. So it feels like right now the ref-player relations and ref-coach relations are at an all-time low, or just especially kind of rearing its head around the holidays, I guess. But I don't think it's that big of a concern, because I still think the Lakers, I mean, they get to the free throw line a ton, so I don't think there's been many games for them to complain about. Like, certainly there can be instances and maybe late in a game or a certain call, a certain thing goes against them. I know they've been upset at times with the challenges or some of these 50-50 calls with charge block or whatnot. But I think more often than not, they get a neutral to positive whistle. I don't think like that's really a concern. I do think that, to Jason's point about like the true shooting percentage, them being so reliant on getting to the free throw line can be a concern come playoff time, because depending on, I mean, just in general, I think teams, like the foul calls go down, free throw attempts go down, but it could also depend on the series. It could depend on the opponent. It could depend on maybe a couple of the games of the series are higher free throw games, but then several of them are lower. So I think looking at like the team that everyone is chasing, the standard right now that you have to beat is OKC. And that is a matchup that I think the Lakers have to prepare for in terms of not getting certain calls. Like we've seen it now going back to the last postseason, going back throughout the regular season, like OKC plays with a certain level of physicality. They have a certain leeway with the refs that
they're going to get
they
away
are
with
able
murder.
To maul you.
Are you saying OKC gets ref differently than everybody else?
Well, I just think that I'm not going to go there. I just think they play with a certain level of physicality. Like they dictate the terms of engagement from the opening tip. I'll even give them credit here for being able to do that, because they just play with a certain level of force on the defensive side. And I thought it actually really hurt the Lakers in the OKC matchup specifically, where Luka loves the little lean in with the left shoulder and then flinging up the runner or the floater, getting downhill in the pick and roll, leaning into the guy, lofting it up. And he's so good that he often makes that shot even when it is called a foul. You're not getting that call against OKC consistently. Like he's not getting that call. And I think one thing with both Luka and Austin, but I think it stood out a little bit more so with Luka lately, has been like once you try that move a couple times and you don't get the call, I think you have to move on to a different tactic or a different approach. And it feels like sometimes he's like, let me try it a third time, or let me try it a fourth time, and then he doesn't get it again. Or maybe he gets one of them, but then he'll try it again and not get it. And then it's like, all right, well, now you've gone maybe like 1-for-4 here, or even 2-for-4, but like we're upset and didn't get back in transition or something, and it costs the team a basket. And I just think he needs to do a better job of like realizing how the game is being officiated that night and then adjusting to that. Because again, he does get that call a lot, so I understand where he's coming from. It's totally normal to be like, hey, I typically get this call, but there are some nights where the refs are putting their whistle away. The Lakers aren't getting certain calls. And I think team-wide, but also specifically with the stars, they need to adapt to that quicker.
Yeah, it's it is a situation where Luka like gets frustrated that he doesn't get the call, and so then he tries to force it in order to get that call the next time down. I think that can sometimes be a bit of a problem. By the way, we did just get an update here from Lakers practice. Dan Wojcicki saying pretty big wrap on Luka's calf, and but running shoes on. Looks like DeAndre Ayton and Austin Reeves were at least partial participants. And then JJ Redick said Luka is day to day with a lower calf injury. So that's not the definitive statement regarding whether or not Luka is in or out for tomorrow's game against the Phoenix Suns. But nonetheless, at least he's day to day. It could have been, I guess that's really where we need to land with this. Could have been worse.
Could have been worse.
We're in day to day right now. And then, oh, now we've got another update from Dave McMenamin. Austin Reeves and Rui also may remain day to day. Ayton was a full participant in practice, and Vincent is out. So that would put, I would imagine, obviously Gabe will be designated as out on the injury report. DeAndre Ayton sounds like he will be in on the injury report for tomorrow against the Phoenix Suns, or maybe he'll be listed as probable, something like that. And then again, if we're to guess, Luka, Austin, Rui, some degree of questionable, though based on the reporting from the other day, Rui sounded more like a no-go for tomorrow's game. Luka and Austin may be truly questionable.
Yeah, they said 3 to 5 days with Rui, so that would put tomorrow as borderline, but it sounds like he has a real shot to play on Christmas.
Ayton is so important when one of the big three is out, because he can always like scale up his offense a little bit. So that'd be good news. Like if it's Austin, LeBron, and Ayton, I think they have a shot.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Okay. Well, good to get that news. I know we've been waiting on that to find out what's going on with those players. All right, let's talk a little bit about LeBron before we get into our purely questions and comments section. By the way, guys, if you have questions, comments, put them in the chat. We're going to get to those in just a moment. But we referenced it a little bit earlier in the show. I think LeBron showed more bounce in that game against the Clippers the last week or so. I think we've seen increased energy, increased explosiveness from LeBron James. He's starting to look more like himself. Jason, what are you seeing out of LeBron? Are you optimistic about him now moving forward in the season that he's going to look more and more like himself as we move forward here?
So there's a lot to be encouraged by. I think athletically he looks about as good as you could expect for this part of his timeline. I don't think he's necessarily at his whatever his ceiling is going to be this season. I think he's got a little ways to go to get there. I think there's another level of some of the rim finishing stuff that he's just not quite where he needs to be, but he's beaten people off the dribble. I think his like short range shot making has actually been pretty solid. I think he's been passing the ball incredibly well this year. I think that's been a big bright spot for him. I am a little concerned about the jumper. It's way too early to have any sort of big picture conversation about whether or not LeBron is shooting the ball well enough. Because it is kind of the thing that tends to come last as a basketball player when you're working your way back into rhythm, especially from the three-point line. But LeBron does have a tendency every once in a while, like every few years, to just have a year where he can't shoot. Like we saw that in 2023. I'd argue it was one of the big reasons why they couldn't beat Denver. It was just LeBron was just could not shoot that entire playoff run. And 2015 was another time that LeBron. So like LeBron will have these like entire seasons where he just shoots the ball poorly. And then outside of that, he's like always like a 40% catch and shoot dude, right? But like he'll have these years where he doesn't shoot it well. So like, I think there's a certain amount of like the form looks a little sloppy this year. That's a little concerning to me, but like I want to wait a month before I get too worked up about it. But the jumper really is the only downside. I think he's looked about as good as you could hope defensively over the last couple of weeks. I think he's looked as good driving the basketball and short range finishing and on his kickouts. And I think he looks mentally locked in and engaged and wants to win. And like, I think overwhelmingly, like for a 40-year-old who's about to turn 41, things are going well. I just have my eyes open towards the jump shooting.
Yeah. Yeah. He's at 28% from three right now, which is obviously a low for him. I do expect there to be a bounce back there. I think that's going to come back around. I believe he was 3 for 7 against the Clippers. One of the few players that actually shot decently from three in that game, hit a couple late. So, Jovan, where are you at on LeBron? Because I'm feeling better and better about LeBron on the season here moving forward. I think 28% from three, I would be shocked if that's where we finish the season with LeBron at. I think the jumper is going to bounce back.
I agree. And I thought the way that he was used, like I was taking notes on just the variety of ways that the Lakers used him offensively. And I think this speaks to LeBron's offensive versatility, but he had a couple back cuts in the half court against John Collins, leveraging, hey, okay, this guy doesn't have the foot speed to necessarily hang with me. Let's leverage them overplaying the denial and then back cutting that. Obviously, he got out in transition multiple times in that game, hit a couple of pull-up jumpers, hit his first basket was that step back three on the right, kind of right wing corner area against Zoo. And then I thought, especially in the second half of the game, looked much better and much more comfortable attacking from the left wing, left slot area and getting downhill. And you know, they were running a lot of empty corner actions for him to leverage the Clippers' lack of foot speed and lack of help against him specifically. Like once Zubats went out, it changed. I thought, like, it would have been really interesting to see what that looked like longer term with, like, Luka had the rough start to the game, but with no Zubats, I think if Luka were not injured and able to play, I think the Lakers have a really competitive game there on their hands. But LeBron is I think just looked much better, and again, like, that I think for me that there is a usage component here where he showed he can scale up and he was able to help the Lakers go on a couple of runs, was a big part of some of the defensive runs there. Like I thought his rotations and help and boxing out and just what was active on that side of the ball, and I think, like, when you put him in a Banshee style lineup, LeBron, I think sometimes there can be some bad habits with the lack of rotating, lack of boxing out, whatever. And I actually think, like, sometimes that plays out more in the starting group where, like, when the whole lineup isn't defending or isn't defending at a certain level, LeBron can sometimes fall into that. But when the lineup, when you have Jared Vanderbilt pressuring 94 feet and switching across multiple guys playing passing lanes, when you have Marcus diving on the ground for loose balls, when you have Jackson Hayes protecting the rim or Maxi Kleba switching out onto guys, like, LeBron is going to buy into that and then I think raise his defensive focus and effort and urgency. And I thought he was a big part of some of their defensive runs. So I think he's progressively looking more like himself. Three straight games of 26 plus. I think he's been looking better and better. And the final thing is the jumper. I think that there's always a balancing act. We've talked about this with Luka and Austin to a degree where you want a certain level of aggression and assertion, but I did not love his first three shots of the game. I thought he was settling a bit. I thought he was just kind of testing out the jumper, didn't have it. And then he started to progressively attack and get downhill more. So I'd like to see a little bit more of that the jumper's not quite there right now, but he can always get downhill. He's LeBron James. And when he gets downhill, good things happen.
28, 7, and 6 on true shooting in his last five games. So at least from the standpoint of counting stats, he's reaching a level that I think is encouraging.
Yeah, 100%, 100%. He is definitely getting there. You could see it. He was even, I noticed there was a loose ball on a play. LeBron came over and stripped Kawhi, and the Lakers were trying to make a push. The ball's loose, and LeBron was the first one to the floor, was the first one to dive on top of the ball. You could see it with those lineups that have the Banshees, as they're called. He does seem to get energized by that group being out there on the court. And we're seeing that bounce really come back from him. You mentioned him getting downhill and driving to the basket. He does it in a way that I think is so important for the Lakers. And we're also seeing this play out in transition too. He brings a different element than what Luka and Austin bring. Luka and Austin are obviously not the same player, but similar in that they're both going to use their body. They're both going to use their positioning, their skill, their know-how in order to create angles and get their looks that way. They're going to use a little bit of their foul drawing capability. LeBron is just the freight train. He's a blur. He's the one that can fly past everybody, get to the rim, and he is a problem driving to the basket. Luka and Austin, you want them getting into the paint and they can kill you with the mid-range shot, but it's not being done in the same way that LeBron does, not with the same force. And so I think it's really important that they have that, and we're seeing it play out, as I mentioned, in transition, where LeBron is able to really get the ball and go and attack and run with that group. And that's a different element to this Lakers team that we've seen. This is a team that, even when they were doing well forcing turnovers, most of their points off of turnovers were actually being scored in the half court rather than getting out in the fast break. Even when it was a live ball turnover, they would settle into a half court set, and their half court offense was just so good, they were still generating points at a high enough rate where their points off of turnover numbers were really good. But LeBron gives you the ability to actually get downhill and really get out and run the break and truly generate some of those open looks. So I think part of this burst for LeBron that we've seen recently has given the Lakers another element to their offense. In addition to the defense that he brings, he's constantly calling things out, predicting what other teams are going to do. So this is important for the Lakers that LeBron gets back on track. I mean, it's kind of a no duh comment because he's LeBron James, right? But I think in terms of what he brings to the floor, it's also something different than what the other two guys in the big three bring. And it's something much, much needed by this Lakers team.
I actually think the three of them complement each other really well if they have the right three and five. And I think that's where I think the redundancies become a bigger problem when you add in a role player that also is redundant. That I think that's where it gets tricky.
Yeah, absolutely. That's where it can get tough when and I guess that
I'm not saying anything. I'm not saying anything.
The starting five.
I teed that one up for you so nice, Yoma.
You threw me the lob, but I didn't jump. I'm sorry. We just had a turnover. It just sailed out of bounds. But
Austin lob. Yeah.
Hey, he hasn't had one in a while because he hasn't played.
Because he hasn't been playing.
Yeah, we've missed out on our nightly Austin lob.
Yeah. Oh, man. Austin is an optimistic lob passer, that's for sure. All right, guys. We're going to give a quick shout out to our sponsor, SeatGeek, and we're going to dedicate the final portion of the show to our questions and answers. So put them in the chat. We'll get to it in just a moment.
So my wife and I moved to Denver this summer, which means I'm finally back in an NBA city and I can go to NBA games again. So obviously I want to see the Lakers before the end of the season, especially before LeBron retires. So I've been looking at Lakers Nuggets in March coming up to see if I can get some tickets. And this is why I want to give the sponsor of today's video, SeatGeek, a huge shout out. With over 35 million downloads, SeatGeek is the number one rated ticketing app. They have over 70,000 events listed on the app, obviously concerts and festivals, but sports as well, the NBA, the NFL. They even have World Cup tickets on sale right now. And my favorite thing about the app is just how easy it is to find the best deal because of their deal score. So like, these are the tickets to Lakers Nuggets in March. I can sort by deal, so I'm just looking at 10s on their deal score. These are all the best available deals in their respective sections, and look at how many options they have. So I can just pick the section in the arena I want to stay in or sit in, and I can find the best ticket in that section pretty easily. It makes that process so much easier. And they have your back. Every ticket is backed by their buyer guarantee. And of course, I have a code for you guys. You can use code LakersCollective10 for 10% off your next set of tickets at SeatGeek. That's 10% off any tickets with promo code LakersCollective10. Make sure you click on the link in the description to download the app and have the code automatically added to your account so you can use it later. Thank you to SeatGeek.
All right, and again, a big shout out to SeatGeek, our sponsor. We appreciate them. Use the link in the description down below and that code LakersCollective10. Like this comment, Jovan got up for that jam. Unfortunately, the pass sailed like 5 feet behind. All right, let's get into some of our chat questions and comments here. We've got Kevin says, expiring is most valuable to the Cavs because they're a second apron team. Yeah, I mean, you got to be frustrated if you're Dan Gilbert right now and you're paying the kind of money they're paying for that team. They're the only second apron team in the NBA right now, and they have been having their struggles. Of course, injury issues hitting that team as well. But they are the seventh seed. Rui for Jared Allen, Gabe, Maxi, and if I don't think the Cavs would swap Jared Allen straight up for Rui Hachimura. I think they would want more than that. But Gabe, Maxi, and a first for DeAndre Hunter. Cavs pay a third team to take Dalton Connect's money or to make money work. Well, important that we remember, and you did so here, the Cavs cannot aggregate salaries in a trade while they are a second apron team, so they can't stack up players in a deal. They don't do this in this situation. Jason, you know, from our conversation we had a couple of weeks ago, I know you've got some thoughts on Hunter winding up on the Lakers, and you're not in favor of that target.
Yeah, to me, DeAndre Hunter is just a better version of Rui, but he more or less is a guy that is out of position when he plays the three. He's not a super attentive perimeter defender. He's not a guy that excels in the dirty work. He's a knockdown three-point shooter. I think he's a little bit more polished in his off-the-dribble game. I would say he is definitely a little bit faster of foot than Rui, but it's not in a way that functionally shows up well for them. I just don't think he is a substantial upgrade over Rui at all. Even if I do think he's better, I just think he's better at all the same stuff and weak at all the same stuff. The team that I keep thinking about, Miami's spiraling, man. And they've lost 7 out of 8 now. And I just keep wondering if maybe, just maybe, you can swoop in there with a couple of expirings and a second round pick and steal Andrew Wiggins to try to get off of that second year of that deal. Because they've got 2 years left of Wiggins. The Lakers got a couple expirings. That's the kind of guy that I keep, as Miami spirals, I keep looking at Miami. I'm just having a staring contest with Andrew Wiggins. I understand why the Lakers wouldn't want to give up a first for him, but if they could get him for a couple of expirings in a second, I would jump on that in a heartbeat.
And would you include Dalton Connect in that deal?
I don't think they'd need to.
Okay. If they can yes. do it with, hey, great.
But yeah, absolutely.
But Jovan says yes. Like, yes.
Sure.
Yes.
Yeah. Sure. No.
Yeah.
Jovan would drive him to the airport, right?
Look, what if it's a Deuthero? What if Miami says we need a Deuthero?
That's what I was just thinking. He's kind of like the interesting. I think he's worth more than a second round pick, arguably, depending on, like, especially. I think if the Lakers make a trade, it's probably trending toward like post January 15th. That there's certainly. We could see like a DFS type situation here in the next week, I guess, technically, but realistic. I mean, like Herb Jones, for example, right? Like if that's the top trade guy, he can't be traded till January 14th. So if the Lakers are potentially waiting out that option and seeing where New Orleans is at, or maybe if they soften their stance, I think a second half of January, if not early February, trade is probably more likely. And at that point, if Adu has played a little bit more and shown some flashes, like that could be worth more than a second round pick. So then maybe you're able to still keep the first, but it is something like the two expirings, a due and a second. You're not giving up a first. You're maybe even keeping Dalton in, out of the deal, but that's interesting. Maybe.
Can I jump in here too quick about Adu? And we talked about this a little bit last week, and Adu actually, I thought, was okay against the Clippers. He had some good defense and rebounding moments where his athleticism popped. I think he is years away from being a real rotation player, like 3 to 4 years away from being like a dead serious rotation player on a championship level team. So like if you are really looking at yourself as the team that is essentially responsible for shepherding the first half of Lucas Prime, at least, if not potentially longer, I don't think Adu fits into that picture. So like I wouldn't cling to Adu if you could get a player that could dramatically. I looked at him as a good high upside pick for where they took him. I hope that, like, if he does stay with the Lakers, I'm going to enjoy watching his development. But I think I've seen a lot of Lakers fans like clamoring for more of him. And I just don't like, it's not an Adu problem. He's young. And this is a league that takes a long time to learn how to play in. And I just don't think he's going to be ready for a few years.
Yeah. He's 2 years away from being 2 years away is what
exactly.
Is what you're saying.
Exactly.
It takes a little while to go from zero to zero. But we look at the challenge is like Jovan's right. With Dalton Connect, if it's Connect, yes, we drive him to the airport. I even let him pick the music, right? He could drive him to the airport. But Adu, if
someone in the chat says he has to sit in the back.
He has to sit in the back. if Adu does hit, he's the type of player that the Lakers and everybody else, skill set wise, are looking for. I think that's the challenge. Whereas if Dalton Connect hits, he could definitely help you, but does he check the most pressing boxes for the Lakers right now? No. And so I think that's the challenge, where if you have your pick between the two, and I would assume opposing teams would value Adu over Dalton right now as well, but you'd rather put Dalton in the trade than Adu Thero.
One quick note here. I've been testing out different versions of an LA Miami trade, and it's almost impossible to get to Wiggins' number without including Rui, because he's making $28.2 million. So for example, Gabe plus Maxi, your two core expirings that are non-essential, right, like non-Rui or Austin, those two plus Adu or plus Dalton, you're $1.7 million short. And then if you, let's just say you add in Dalton and Adu, now you're trading 4 for 1, which on Miami's side would be problematic. So it's tough to make a Wiggins trade work financially without putting Rui in the deal. Like if you do Rui plus one of the expirings, you're right there. That works. So that's just one thing to note.
I would trade Rui for Wiggins in a heartbeat.
So would I.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. I would also
especially
do that.
If you, like, no first in that trade, clearly, right? Like,
yeah.
Rui.
Yeah, no first.
I would Rui, Maxi, and a second at most, I think would be something. I would fight to keep Gabe out of it just to. I know everyone wants Gabe traded, but I think he would have more value potentially in like a separate deal, not like giving it all up for Wiggins.
And then if you do, if you're able to do that, it hurts a little bit to lose. Like, Rui is a legitimately talented player. He's not just a throw-in as an expiring contract or anything like that. But the upside is, if you use Rui as part of your value in that trade, then you do still have that first to use elsewhere if the right opportunity comes along with some expiring salary that you could still put in into a deal. So that could set you up to potentially making multiple moves at the trade deadline if the right opportunities present themselves. So that could be something interesting for the Lakers.
It's kind of unfortunate what happened to him, because like when Anthony Davis was on the team, there was so much more leeway defensively from the 3 and 4 spot. And there was this like, look, we all saw it with Torian Prince and Cam Reddish, where it was like, oh my God, put Rui at the three, please. Like, please put Rui in. And that was like the entire story of the season in 2024. Right. But like, since the Anthony Davis trade, this team, he's just, it's unfortunate, but essentially he's now a redundancy, and he'll just get more of an opportunity playing somewhere else than he will with the Lakers.
Speaking of Rui, Sanjay says, it's kind of dumb not to give your best three-point shooter touches and then expect the team to be an elite three-point team. Now, guys, the way I look at this is Rui is not really a movement shooter. So drawing stuff up for him in that sense is a little bit difficult. He is very much reliant on not only Luka or Austin or LeBron creating the look for him, and then he can sometimes attack closeouts with that one dribble pull-up 15-footer, but it's also reliant upon the defense to a degree, leaving him and giving him that open look. And we have seen some defenses that don't leave him. And that's where it's hard. People say, well, why did Rui only get three shots? I do think he needs to be a little bit more aggressive shooting the three. There's a few times I've seen him turn down the shots when he should have taken them. But I also think some of it is just dependent upon how the defense plays. He's not a guy that no matter what the defense does is getting up, you know, 10 plus shots every night.
I mean, if you want to get into why the Lakers are or can go so cold from three, right? Rui's fifth in the team right now in 3-point attempts per game. And when you have Luka's leading the way at just under 11 on 32%, Austin's just at under 8, 37%. Marcus is third on the team in 3-point attempts at just under 6 at 30%. Like when your top three guys, only one of them right now is above league average. And Austin, like Austin's been, you know, it's been a tale of like two halves to the start of the season where he cannot hit a three to start the season. And then he's been much hotter over the last few weeks. But then you go to LeBron at 5 attempts per game, 28%. So three of the Lakers' top 4 3-point shooters in terms of volume right now are shooting 32% or worse. And that kind of explains it. Then you get to Rui at number 5. So I think that there is a bit of a correlation here in terms of Rui's volume and attempts and the Lakers being last in the NBA in catch and shoot threes generated. So I think despite having an embarrassment of offensive riches in terms of the playmaking and the passing and the ball movement, they could do a better job of generating those types of shots. But also Rui has a reputation now where like he's on the scouting report as he is the laser on the Lakers. You are not leaving Rui to help off or to dig down or something. If I'm playing against the Lakers, like that is the one guy I do not want shooting. Everyone else, take as many threes as you want, you know, within reason. So I think that's a part of it. But certainly him getting 4.1 3-point attempts per game, I do think that is some, like we've talked about it before. Rui's kind of the bellwether of the ball movement and the shot quality to some degree. And that is an area where like I would like to see him up closer to 5, 6, maybe even 7 3-point attempts per game.
To your point, Trevor, like there's a huge difference between being a guy who can knock down shots and a guy who's good at getting open. And that's kind of the thing. Like the best shooters are so good at relocating and can shoot on the move and they thrive in transition chaos and they do all this stuff so that they always get 7, 8, 9 threes up a game. And, you know, Rui is just a product of whatever the game plan from the defense is producing. And that is kind of the tricky thing. Like when Luka can dictate blitzes, Rui is so valuable to have out there because he can finish as a baseline cutter. He can hit an open corner three. I mean, he's hitting over 50% of his unguarded catch and shoots, according to Synergy. But as soon as you guard him, his percentages plummet. He becomes a mid-30s three-point shooter if you can get a contest on him. And he kind of needs to be open. And so in any sort of drop coverage look or any sort of situation where the defense is not putting two on the ball, Rui's not going to get in the types of looks that unlock his value relative to a real kind of natural shooter in that way. Like, for example, like, I feel like Dalton is a guy that kind of has some natural gift for like relocating and finding openings and transition chaos to get threes off. He just can't knock them down at a high enough rate for it to bring real value. But like that to me is the trick. Like, Rui is the quintessential knockdown set shooter, but it's just such a small window of opportunity that you have there to capitalize on that. And just how many wide open catch and shoot threes do you really get when you get into these tougher playoff series anyway?
Well, and that's, you know, to put a bow on this, that's the also part of the argument when we talk about, well, can you trade Rui given his 3-point percentage and then get a guy who doesn't shoot quite as well as Rui does? What's that guy going to shoot when he's getting Rui's looks, right? Rui gets some phenomenal looks when he does take threes. So I think that's something that we have to keep in mind with, if the Lakers do move him and they get a guy back that's maybe not a 40 plus percent 3-point shooter, wouldn't be out of the question for that 3-point percentage, rare as though it may be, to actually go up when he does become a Los Angeles Laker. this one, your boy Rich, we don't have to dive in depth into this because none of this is feasible here. We appreciate the super chat, but Cavs are playing terrible. Possible to do a sign and trade for LeBron, getting Mobley. The Cavs would never do that with Evan Mobley. The Cavs, LeBron, maybe Bronny, get a welcome home tour. Good money for LeBron. We get a perfect player for Luka and Austin Reeves. I would love Evan Mobley on the Lakers, but the Cavs would never give up Evan Mobley just to bring LeBron back on top. And we're talking sign and trades. So that's the summer. The Cavs, as a second apron team right now, accepting a player via sign and trade triggers a hard cap at the first apron. So it'd be all but impossible for the Cavs, unless they do some drastic things over the summer ahead of this, to actually make this work. If LeBron's going to be a Cav, he's going to have to take a well below max. We're probably maybe even talking about a veteran minimum, depending on whether or not they're still above the second apron type deal for him to get there. So I would love to say I'm wrong and that Evan Mobley winds up with the Lakers. I think he'd be a great fit, but I just don't see this as possible.
Random Cavs thought surrounding that, the Cavs are a textbook example of what we were talking about, the injuries. Like, last year they were healthy all year, but then Darius gets hurt in the postseason and then they fall off of a cliff. This year they can't stay healthy for anything and they've been falling apart. They've got some really strong lineup data surrounding their core four, but those dudes just can't stay on the floor. It's a casual reminder. You'd rather be healthy at the end than be healthy during the middle. So that's why it's so important to manage these injuries over the course of the season.
The way you get closest is some version of a Jarrett Allen, Darius Garland for LeBron trade that gets you close financially, but then you probably have to loop in a third team because, right, I'm testing different trades out right here, and it looks like Lakers would be taking on almost $7 million extra in that. So maybe you could loop in a third team, but then it does get trickier. It's tough. It's tough to make that type of trade work.
Yeah,
and you trade Austin because you have Garland. You trade Austin for Herb and Trey.
To me, I'm not even saying it makes sense. I'm just saying, like, financially, what would be the most feasible would have to be some sort of Allen Garland. But then, yeah, Garland, Austin, and Luka does not work together.
Let's just flip the whole roster over, guys. Let's do it.
Why not? Let's just trade teams, the Cavs and the Lakers, and then there you go. all right, let's go here. Conspiracy theory here. John says Luka having an injury sounds like a lie and a weak excuse. I realized the refs held their whistle. He cried at the refs and quit while the Clippers picked up. So Luka was just so upset at the whistle that he decided he did not want to play basketball anymore. That's the theory being put out here.
Obviously not what happened there. I will say Luka, that was some of the worst basketball I've ever seen Luka play in that first quarter. Oh my God. Like, he obviously got hurt for real, but that first quarter was an eyesore. He was almost single-handedly responsible for their deficit. It was like that and then Jackson getting punked by Zubats because that's just such a tough matchup for him in his first shift. Those were the two things where you look up and they're down 15 or whatever it was.
All right, let's go here. What about a Jrue Holiday as a target to watch? Well, the Blazers have famously not traded with the Lakers in decades. I would be surprised if that changes. But I think the Blazers specifically went out and got much. They got criticized a lot for it, but they went out and got Jrue Holiday, brought him into this team because they wanted to take that next step. I don't know if they're going to try to move on from it. And if they do, is it going to be to the Lakers? You have to remember that some of the teams in the West, they don't want to be teams that are going to help the Lakers. Now, if the deal is a good deal for them, they'll do it. But that probably means the price the Lakers are paying are not is not one that Lakers fans would be super happy with.
Yeah, I'm looking at it now, and like you don't even get there with just Rui and Gabe. Like that's the other thing here is it's just hard for the Lakers to match salaries in like the high 20s and above. I think the sweet spot for them is mid 20s or lower, because Jrue Holiday is making $32 million this year. Then he's got two more years after that at 34.8 and then 37.2. So this is a trade that is going to have to cost you Rui on top of the additional salary to match. But even then, you're probably in a situation where it's Rui, Gabe, and Dalton, Rui, Gabe, and Adu. But now you're doing a 3-for-1. Portland has Portland's going to have to figure out their roster situation after that. And these aren't guys that they're necessarily just going to be able to waive. So I think it gets a little tricky. I think that the Lakers have to trade for guys probably making 25-ish or lower.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I also don't love the idea of going for an older athlete like that. Like, I think Wiggins is about as old as I would go
for the two more years. Like, 37-year-old Jrue Holiday making $37.2 million. That's a little scary.
Yeah. I don't feel so great about that. All these idiotic takes from Lakers fans regarding trading Austin Reeves this season when they don't factor in his contract. I'm sure it takes some patience. Yeah, I mean, there is a very vocal kind of anti-Austin group out there, but the challenge is always when they say, well, you have to trade Austin. It cannot work with Luka. Even if that's what you want to buy into, value-wise, you're not going to get what you want out of Austin Reeves right now. Trading him right now, because he's a flight risk for other teams, just doesn't makes sense. Now, if you're of that mindset, the time to move him would be after you sign him to a new contract, and then teams have certainty. Otherwise, he could get traded to such a team, could give up significant assets for him, and then he could walk away in July. No team's going to want to give up value in that type of situation. So, I don't see an Austin Reeves trade as realistic this season.
The only trade I think that sort of piques my interest is the Trey Murphy, Herb Jones trade that people have proposed, but
sure.
I think both sides might look at that trade as like we talked about the complications of if you are doing a Luka, Trey, Herb perimeter trio, you need another high level scorer and playmaker in the front court, either at the four or the five. And then for New Orleans, they're asking for 2+ picks for each of these guys. So they might just look at that and like, hey, Austin's not good enough or not worth the value. And we don't know if he's going to stay in New Orleans. Like, we wouldn't do this. So, I think that's the only one to me that at least enters like a plausible, that's kind of interesting for both sides. But I don't even, I think both sides could also look at it and just be like, no.
Yeah. Yep. Agree on that. Guys, Clay to LA for Gabe. Which backup center can LA get? So as far as Clay Thompson to LA for Gabe, the Lakers are too close to their first apron hard cap. They've got just like 1.5, as I recall off the top of my head, below the first apron hard cap. And Clay's at about 17 million. Gabe's at 11.5. So the math doesn't work on trying to do something like that. So I don't see, for the same reason as what Jason was just saying about Jrue Holiday being an older player and Jovan added in, you know, his contract at 37 years old and all of that, he's not in the range of players that the Lakers should be targeting if they want players that are going to fit with Luka and with Austin long-term. You need to find players that are mid to late 20s, maybe early 30s is about as far as you want to stretch there. Certainly Clay doesn't fit that mold, nor is he defensively what he used to be. If we're talking about Clay Thompson 5 years ago, absolutely. That you go after that guy all day. The Clay Thompson right now, while he definitely can shoot and he can help you there, I don't think he quite checks the boxes the Lakers need. And frankly, if they're going to give up any kind of assets, whether it's expiring contracts or otherwise, I think they all have to be used towards that goal of adding athleticism with shooting, switchability defensively at specific positions. Everything has to be put in that endeavor.
I would absolutely love him on a buyout.
Yeah.
But that's about it.
I just came up with a fun fake trade here.
All right.
You could trade Gabe Vincent and Maxi Kleba back to Dallas for Clay Thompson and old friend D'Angelo Russell. That works.
Oh, I was hoping you were going to say Max Christie.
not Max Christie. you could do Max Christie instead, but I think no, it gets Lakers might have to throw someone else in. But yeah, no, I mean, I think at that contract, it's tough to acquire Clay. And then backup center, I think Jackson's playing pretty well, right? Like, I think if you could,
I think so too.
If you could get Daniel Gafford from Dallas, if it's like a Gafford for Gabe and Maxi, or yeah, I don't even know if that works because I know Gafford is there was kind of a weird thing with his contract where I think the extension number was not actually the number that's his value in a trade. If I'm not mistaken, could be wrong on that, but he's somewhere in that like 15 to 20. I mean, I have it here. I could just look it up, but I think Gafford is an exception where you are getting a clear upgrade over Jackson, in my opinion, or at least like a different type of backup center. But for the most part, I don't think they have to necessarily like upgrade over that.
Yeah.
Also, just random thought: the $14 million
for Gafford.
Max Christie is kind of another interesting example of the wing development trajectory. Like, it was like towards the end of year three that he started to kind of look like a semi-reliable guy. And then year four, he looked like a legit start. Like, I think that's how long it would take for a dude to reach that level. And that's where you just got to ask yourself, like, you know, at that point, LeBron's definitely gone. You know, like, how good is the team, the roster, really? But to your point, Trevor, if that guy pops, you know, he could be a reliable starter at that point.
Right. In the famous words of Stefania Bell, we're all day today. We're talking about the injury section. Yes.
We are day to day.
Lakers collected movie cast, Glenn Powell, Henry Cavill, Joseph Gordon-Levitt. Thoughts? This show has blown up. Whoa. Now we're making the movie.
Who's who? I don't know who's who here.
I don't know. All I know is whoever is Henry Cavill, they have to do, what's it called? The arm loading thing where he does the pump, the shoulder pump. Yeah, that's it. Got to do that.
That dude, one of the coolest dudes in the world and huge like sci-fi fan.
All right, let's go here. Your gauge on Luka's approval rating among Lakers fans. I estimate it was like 50-50 when LeBron first came to LA. There was a lot of like, LeBron's been kind of the enemy for so long. There's still, you know, that element there. Where are we at on Luka? It is kind of a weird dynamic.
I'm going to spin this around on you guys. Yeah. I think Lakers fans are all thrilled to have Luka. I think Luka fans are like struggling with the fact that when you play for the Lakers, it comes with like a high standard. Like, I think that is something that is like, that's why LeBron struggled. LeBron was managed game to game compared to the Laker greats. You know, that's what Luka's dealing with now. And I think some of Luka's fans have struggled with that.
It feels like there's been a little bit of a civil war going on between Luka fans and LeBron fans, and
so stupid.
Sort of, you know, blaming each other. I don't know, because those two guys love each other. Like, those two guys have, I mean, it was Luka's favorite player growing up that he modeled part of his game after. And LeBron has spoken multiple times about Luka being his favorite player to watch. And they have a really good relationship. And it's, yeah, I don't want to get the chat going here with this stuff. But yeah, I mean, I've definitely been noticing it in my streams and in my comments.
It's just stan culture. Like, that's the whole point, is like LeBron and Luka are on the same team trying to achieve the same things. It's in the best interest for the Lakers for both of them to succeed. No one is under the delusion that this is LeBron's team. It is Luka's team. So it's not like it's some sort of weird power grab. Like, I don't know what it is, but like, for some reason, every success or failure has to be like blamed or given credit to one of those two sides, which is just classic stan behavior, which has been poisoning sports for well over a decade now.
Yeah, it's one of my least favorite things that we've seen in terms of the conversation around sports. But would you be interested in Pat Williams and Ayo Dosunmu from Chicago for the Lakers? That means bye-bye Captain Cardio. It also would probably mean bye-bye cap space for most for this summer, or at least would significantly limit that. Love the show. Happy holidays. Where are we at on Patrick Williams? Because Ayo Dosunmu needs a new contract, but I can see it with him as a point of attack guard that you could put in there, at least to move Austin out of that role for the time being. What about Patrick Williams? Where are we at on him? And is he worth, because he's got a long-term deal, as I recall, it's like $18 million per season for the next like four or five seasons. I'll pull it up right now. But Is he worth that contract? Is he a positive value right now?
He's got four more years.
Yeah.
Or, three more years. So yeah, three more years after this, all at $18 million flat. That's an interesting contract. He has been playing better this season. I don't know if he's, you know, one thing that I remain steadfast with is that if the Lakers are trading for, I mean, it depends how you want to view it, but ideally, like if you're trading for Patrick Williams, that's kind of like your big move, I guess, right? Like medium move, unless you end up flipping Rui in like a separate deal. Like I assume they tried to base this around the two expirings of Gabe and Maxi. And if like that's your swing, I just don't know if Patrick Williams is a closing 3-D guy against OKC or Denver or Houston or San Antonio in like, you know, game five on the road, you're down 5 points, 3.5 minutes left. Like, do you want Patrick Williams out there? I kind of lean on the no side. So I think ideally you trade for the player that you feel better. Like I feel much better about Herb Jones being out there. I feel better about Andrew Wiggins being out there. I feel better about Dylan Brooks being out there. We don't know if those guys are available. We don't know. And obviously they're going to be more expensive, but I think it's a combination of like not being quite sure and him having a three additional years. That's where I have, I like a number that's like not too high, but I don't feel great about it. Like I think if he was a free agent this past summer, he would have gotten a smaller contract. Now he has been, I think, playing more consistently on both sides of the ball and has been shooting the ball pretty well, but I don't feel great about it, if I'm being honest.
Yeah, to me, Patrick Williams is a lot closer to DeAndre Hunter than he is to Herb Jones.
That makes sense. Yeah. And now, what about this, which is same idea, except it's Isaac Okoro instead of Patrick Williams. Now, they just traded. They traded Lonzo Ball for Okoro during the summer. But Isaac Okoro, $11 million this season, $11.8 million next season. That's it. That takes away a lot of those, that long-term salary objection there.
I'm not trading a first for Io or Isaac. Like to me, the first is only going to a legitimate bona fide. This guy can be our starting small forward for the next 5 years.
Well, and then you are adding long-term money with Terrence Mann there.
I missed the second part of that.
Yeah.
Terrence Mann and Haywood for them in a second.
Or I guess he's posing this as two different trade paths.
I see.
Right? Either Gabe, right, Kleba in the first, or I guess in the second one, it's Gabe, Kleba, and a second for Mann and Haywood. I like Terrence Mann more in the context of a Vando trade because I think he's a more playable player in a playoff context. And then you're still you're taking on a little bit additional long-term money, but you're almost like, this is almost pre-agency if you're trading for Terrence Mann here, where now you're adding $16 million on the books next season that you did not have. And that's before factoring in, you're going to have, obviously, like Austin's cap hold is lower, but you're eventually going to be adding Austin back on a higher deal, potentially DeAndre Ayton, Rui, if they end up keeping him. We don't know what's going to happen with LeBron yet, if he's going to play or what that contract would look like. So there's a lot of factors up in the air here that I like Terrence Mann. I don't know if I want to commit to that for $16 million next year and also have Vando on the books. If you could get off the Vando contract and it's like a little bit more than that, that's a different story. But yeah, I would probably pass on the second one. The first one, I really like Io. I just don't know if he's probably too small, in my opinion, to be the third guy next to Luka and Austin.
I like the direction Jovan's going in terms of looking at as these like big chunk salaries. So like, you know, Luka's going to be on a max, you know, Austin's going to be on a max, you know, Ayton on his next deal is going to be making probably at least double, if not triple, what he's making right now. So like, if you look at that as like your foundational kind of background, you can really only afford to pay one more massive salary, like one more large, like, you know, $20, $30 million salary before you start having a lot of trouble filling out the rest of the roster. And that's why, like, if you're going to bring back any big salaries in this deadline, it's got to be for that starting three.
Yeah, I'm ultimately in agreement with that. I also think it's interesting that Haywood Highsmith keeps getting put to the Lakers. I don't know. People just don't watch the Nets I guess, but he hasn't played yet this season. And the latest update on him news-wise is that he still hasn't been cleared for contact. So he's not been on the floor yet. I know he's a wing, and the Lakers could use more wing help, but I think they're going to want somebody that's been out there and on the floor. Now, maybe hopefully he comes back next week and he's great, and then by the trade deadline, suddenly you want to trade for him. But I wouldn't assume that he's on the floor anytime soon, especially if he hasn't even been cleared for contact just yet. All right, guys, we're way into overtime here. Yeah, looking at the last few ones that are here, they're mostly pretty in-depth trade questions. I can save these and we can add them on, and I can do them on the next show if that works for you guys.
Yeah, let's just do that.
That works.
Yeah, we got another show on Friday. We got a couple of big games this week to cover.
That's right, a few big games. All right, everybody, appreciate all of you here. Yes, I know we've got guys. Please don't spam the chat. I'm seeing some of the same comments over and over again. Let's not do that. Mods, if you want to be a mod, just get at me over on Twitter. We'll get
Trevor Lane, Jason S.
Somebody's been making up different names and putting our names in them and stuff. But anybody, if you want to be interested, or if you're interested in being a mod, if you're a mod already on one of our channels, especially, just shoot me a DM over on X. Maybe we'll figure something out there so that we're not trying to juggle everything all at once here while we're doing the show. But we appreciate all of you who have supported the show so far. Please make sure you do hit that subscribe button. Have a wonderful Christmas. Our next show is going to be on Friday. We're not going to go on Christmas Day. Thursday is Christmas, so we will go on Friday, and we'll be talking about the Lakers and the Rockets. Yovan, Jason, guys, this is fun, as always, and let's go. We've got two games before our next show. Hopefully, they're two wins.
It was great to see you guys. This is becoming one of my favorite parts of every week. And to all of you guys who have supported us, because this show has really taken off since we started, just know how much we appreciate you guys, and we hope you have a happy holidays. And we'll see you on Friday, hopefully for a couple Laker wins.
Happy holidays, everybody. Merry Christmas. And next time we see you, we'll have a couple of big games to talk about.
Let's go. Till next time, everybody. See ya. And stay safe.